Offering a most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Afternoon Satsang. This is Prem, and with me is Sai Prakash. Like we had the pleasure of the past few episodes. Of course, we couldn't do live shows the past couple of weeks, but we are here to continue with the discussion on the book Conversations with Bhagwan Shri Sathya Sai Baba, the beautiful interactions that have been documented by Dr. Hislop, the conversations that he has had the opportunity to have with Swami, as well as he has been a witness to. And as we've seen, the topics vary from being deeply profound to some very practical, if we could put it that way, managerial questions, because he was also part of the organization. He was one of the senior most members of the American organization, the founding members. So a lot of questions would even be on the topic of how do you conduct affairs of the everyday affairs of the organization there. But at the same time, the underlying theme of everything is how to lead a spiritual life and how to better understand Swami's message and Swami's discourses. And in that sense, the question that he's asking today, the couple of questions that he's going to pose today, are on understanding a topic which is something that most of us have heard from Swami and Swami's discourses, but I would always look at it as something that is easily misunderstood, as we will understand when we start the discussion and we go through that. But before that, let's invite Sai Prakash to join all of us. Sairam Sai Prakash.
Sairam, Sairam Prem. Yes, it's such a wonderful feeling coming back to this table and doing mananam of all the topics and words of Swami, which are so powerful. It's such an opportunity that we have pondering over these topics. And as we will realize, everything is interconnected. Right. All these topics are interconnected. You cannot say 2 weeks back, we had a discussion on this and this is a new topic. It might be a new topic, but all these topics are ultimately interconnected. And Swami has explained most of these concepts in such a simple manner. But what you said is so true. Some of these can be conveniently interpreted and can be the cause for a lot of misunderstanding. So it's very important that we try to discuss on what Swami actually means when he says some of these sentences to Dr. John Hislop.
Right, and maybe we'll start off right away with the question that Hislop is asking and what Swami is saying here. Hislop asks, Swami, perhaps I will be able to understand it and explain it. I think this is with regards to the previous question that he had asked about free will and
yes,
where Swami had said that how the thoughts eventually become actions.
Correct.
And where is the relevance of divine will and sankalpa and all of that. So I think in response to that, he says, Swami, perhaps I will be able to understand it and explain it. Swami said that the mind would fix itself if one would live in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
What does Swami mean by living in the moment? How does one live in the moment? And Swami's response to that, something that we've heard from Swami many times in his discourses, Swami says, past is gone, future is not here, there is only the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Live fully now without worry about the future. And then Hislop says, but Swami, one has to look forward to judge the consequences of the action.
Mm-hmm.
Swami says, why? Live now. Act according to your best feelings and thoughts and do not worry.
Mm-hmm.
And Hislop says, but Swami said that Krishna chose Arjuna because Arjuna had foresight and looked ahead to the consequences, what we refer to as Purva Tapa, right? Swami had said that qualified Arjuna better than the likes of Yudhishthira.
Yes.
Because Yudhishthira had paschatapa, or he worried about, I mean, he repented later, but right. Arjuna had forethought. So, I mean, very thoughtful of Islam to bring that up.
Yes.
He says Arjuna had foresight. And Swami's response is beautiful again. Swami says, don't think about Arjuna. He was worried about his relatives. Right. I think we'll take up till here, because the next one is, of course, a clarification that's very beautiful that will need elaboration.
Right.
So, Hislop's question, how do you live in the moment without worrying about the future? Without, because that seems to be responsible living.
Right? Correct.
If a person who is, say, the father of the house, or the you know, the person who is running the house, obviously he'll have to think of the future. You'll have to think of the future of the children. You take your children to a school, you're thinking of their future. You're saving money, you're thinking about the future. You're putting away money for some you know, mishap of the future in the name of insurance or saving. You're thinking about the future. How can you lead a responsible life without thinking about, the future?
In fact, when you're actually bringing out all these points, I've often wondered about this topic, about what does this actually mean, living in the moment, living in the now. And one approach which I have kind of thought to myself, I would like to share with the listeners, and I'm sure there are better ways to look at it, but this is one of the ways of understanding this whole concept of living in the moment. I felt that living in the moment is both the path and the goal.
Right.
So, in a way, you strive to live in the moment. That is the path. So, like you just said, it's just, you know, it's practical. You look at things and you say that, yes, I have to see what is good for now, what is good for the future. And then you consider all the things that affect your future and what have affected you in the past. And you set your action right in the current moment. See, ultimately, you have to act only in the now.
Right.
But you learn from the past and you foresee what could happen in the future. And you are able to handle this and then live in the present. So, when you are considering living in the moment as the path. So, this is when you're still in the spiritual path. So, that is when this is the approach that you have to take, because past, you cannot change the past, neither can you predict the future. But then once you have achieved the goal, once you are a realized master, once you are in that state of awareness, living in the now is a spontaneous expression. It is the state in which you are consciously, you are in that state of 100% living in the now. So what happens is, oftentimes when we hear some statements of great masters, we are wonderstruck of how this could happen, how that could happen. But they are speaking from a level of already having achieved that realization, where you are in a state of constant awareness. So I've always looked at this topic, like most of the topics in you know, any of the spiritual pursuits. It's either the same thing is the path and the same thing is the goal. So even this topic qualifies for that.
I think that's the basis of much of the sadhana that we do.
Right.
Right. When Swami says love all, serve all. Mm. Right. That's what Swami says, that at a point when you discover your true self, love will become an expression.
Correct.
Now love is a path.
Yes.
Right. Same with, you know, you're trying to be peaceful, when you're trying to meditate, or when you're trying to pursue the path of, you know, soham, as Swami would say.
Mm.
I mean, when you discover yourself, you know who you are. But now you're trying to remind yourself at every moment that you are
consciously,
divine.
Consciously try to,
trying in to fact, root yourself.
There is a very beautiful, you know, a video on YouTube I was just seeing the other day. It's about some of the questions which Anandamayi Maa is answering.
Oh, okay.
So, very nice to listen to her voice, and she, you know, she's always in that state of bliss, and the blissful mother, Anandamayi Maa, is a saint in North India, and her speaking is also just like a child. She speaks very sweetly, and she calls, there's a person asking a question, she says, oh father, think of it this way. And so lovingly she explains so many deep spiritual concepts. She says, see, these things come naturally to me. But why don't you think this way? And very sweetly she explains. So one of the questions that was asked is, Ma, what are your views on prayaschittam? Like, you know, you atone for your sins and you...
Right.
And she says, see, I am a small child. I don't know these things. Very sweetly. But I have only one observation to make. You cannot catch the train that has already left the station. So beautifully she says, past is past. You have, your train has left the station. You cannot go and catch the train. Why don't you focus on catching the next train? Or why don't you focus on the train that is currently available here? Why are you worried about going back? So in a way she says, past is past. And a little bit of reading on this topic, living in the moment, there are some very interesting scientific studies. Okay, so I just thought I'll draw attention to that. The authors of the book in 2006, the authors of a book called Stumbling on Happiness. So what they did was, they did a study, like for everything scientific, you need to have a study, you need to have a number of people, you know, participating in the experiment, etc. So what they did was, they developed a web application for iPhone and contacted different participants and they installed this app, like the case study. I don't know the exact number of people. And they had listed about 22 activities. And randomly they would call them and they would find out what activity they are doing and how they are feeling, what is the level of involvement, this, that. So they had a thorough scientific approach to study the index of the happiness at any given point in time based on the activities that these people were doing.
Right.
So it showed some very interesting results. They said the results showed that happiness was more affected by how often people drifted off and where they went in their imagination. Than by the activity they were doing at the time. The researchers say they are confident that being distracted was the cause of unhappiness.
Right.
Okay, so that is one. And then they say, the authors write in the journal Science, in the Science journal, they write, a human mind is a wandering mind and a wandering mind is an unhappy mind. So, is it the human mind is a wandering mind. And a wandering mind is an unhappy mind. The ability to think about what is not happening is a cognitive achievement. So they said, no doubt. See, like, for example, we are sitting and discussing. But if my mind is roaming all over the super bazaar, it is an achievement in cognitive, it's a cognitive achievement. So they say the ability to think about what is not happening is a cognitive achievement that comes at an emotional cost. Very, very beautifully put. I mean, science can only go as far as the mind can take you. And so even within the realm of the mind, what they're saying is, when you are doing something and your thoughts are something of the past or your thoughts are something on the future, that causes more unhappiness than the activity that you're doing. Even if the activity you're doing in the current moment, they go on to explain in that article. In fact, they say, when some of the psychologists say that, suppose you have to do an unhappy thing. Like, for example, in the current moment, you're unwell. You're not well, you're not keeping well. And you have to look after yourself, which is not a very happy thing to do. Even that does not cause as much unhappiness as thinking about the past or future. So they say this is a scientific... See, suppose, okay, for example, you're going to have food and that's a very happy thing for you. It's all right. Your mind doesn't wander off. You're having food and your mind is completely focused on this. So there are certain activities that pleasure the senses, that pleasure this thing, which you automatically you're happy about and you're living in the moment. You're living in the current moment. But when there are inevitable events where you have to live in the moment, like you have to look after yourself when you're not well, they say even that does not cause as much of unhappiness as thinking about the past or the future. So this is what, that was a very interesting study. So even scientifically speaking, living in the now makes a lot of sense.
Right. It just brings to mind many of the things we have already discussed as part of many of the discussions. You know, in fact, a name which we have often quoted, Dr. Seligman, Martin Seligman, is one of the psychologists who suddenly has this idea that why should psychologists always be obsessed with depression and worry and sorrow? Why can't we have a psychology of happiness?
Okay.
Right? And that's when he studies happiness. He says, what makes us happy? Can we figure that out and do more of that? And one of the things that he comes up with is engagement.
Okay.
He says, when you're engaged, when you're engrossed, when all your senses and your concentration is absorbed in an activity that you're doing, that's one of the ways you can be happy.
Right.
Right. So he says that's how you're actually rooted to the now.
Correct.
You're rooted to that moment. And of course, another extension of that is again a name that I think I've spoken of before. There's something called the Stockdale Paradox.
Okay.
Right. This is about a U.S. Marine who was caught and was captured as a prisoner of war during the Vietnam War. Right. And there are many, many tales of what kind of torture they had to endure during that time. So he's one of those people who kind of lived through that and escaped.
Okay.
Right. So he says that all the optimists who were captured along with me, they all perished.
Oh.
So he says even optimism of future.
Yes.
Saying that I'm going to be you know, released in the future, or Christmas day I'll be free and I'll be back with my family in the new year. He says even that is detrimental.
Correct.
Be optimistic, but live in the now.
Live in the now. Right? So that's exactly...
Right. So he says that you are suffering right now and you have to deal with that. If you're trying to look away from the present suffering by looking into the future, even a bright future, he says that that also is not the right approach. So he says optimism is dangerous, and that's a Stockdale paradox.
Oh. Right?
Whenever we talk about living in the present, even as a student, this is one Chinnakatha which Swami would often narrate, and I would never make sense of that. Right? And I'll tell you what is the source of that confusion also. Swami would narrate this Chinnakatha of a man who is in the forest.
Okay.
And all of a sudden he's being chased by a, as all Chinnakathas go, once by a lion, once by a bear. You know, different Chinnakatha Swami would give different images. So he's chased by this wild animal, and trying to run away from it, he climbs a tree.
Okay.
Right? And when he climbs a tree, down at the base of the tree is this wild animal, tiger, lion, whatever it be it. And when he's on the sitting on the branch, he realizes that in the other end of the branch, there is a poisonous snake.
Oh.
So there's a snake on the other end. He cannot go any further. He cannot come down because the wild animal is down there. And to complicate it further, I think Swami says, the branch that he's sitting on is actually breaking anytime it might break and fall. And he's in this incredibly unpleasant predicament. And just then, there is a honey hive, which is right above where he's sitting. And honey is dripping from there, right? And it's falling on his face, and he starts enjoying the honey.
Oh.
Right? And then Swami says, see, this is the plight of today's man. And in caught up in a situation like this, he's still sitting and enjoying the honey. And whenever I would hear this, I would say, what is wrong in that? Right? Because we have been tutored to think that live in the moment means enjoy the moment.
Right?
Enjoy the moment. Nothing wrong in that per se, but there's something fundamentally wrong with that approach which Swami was driving our attention to. But at that time, I used to think, why is Swami saying this? Right? In fact, later I realized that this is actually from the Bhagavatam. This imagery comes.
Okay.
In fact, they've even made a painting out of it, where there is a man who is hanging from this branch. The animal that is trying to attack him is Prarabdha, the past. The snake which is staring at him is the future problem, agami karma or whatever it is. The branch is actually being eaten away by two mice, a black one and a white one, which they say is day and night, which means time is taking away this one. And at the moment, you're enjoying the pleasures of life in the form of honey. I think the whole problem is, you know, be it our media, our cinema, our novels, they all speak of the best way to lead the present moment is to draw the maximum amount of pleasure from it.
Correct.
And that's why this imagery feels right to us, because after all, we are being happy in the moment, right? But the image that Swami gives us is the present is important. And I'm saying all of this at the risk of repeating myself, because when I was doing the Answering Booth program, there was a question on living in the present.
Okay.
And I've been accused by some listeners by saying that I keep repeating myself. But then the truth doesn't change.
You know, correct.
It's the same truth. Mm. Swami did not tire of repeating it.
Exactly.
So we take recourse in that. So Swami gives the analogy of the present being a seed. I think that's a very, very powerful imagery right. that Swami gives.
Mm-hmm.
And when you talk of a seed, see, a seed is very, very important because it has got all the information of the past.
Right.
So when you look at a seed, it has the information of how the seed is going to become a tree. Right. So Swami says that is why a seed is important. All the information of the generations of trees that came before it are there in this seed. You know, be it the way it can handle changes in weather, how it can remain underground when there is a drought. Everything has been coded into this seed. And also it is the father of the future, you know, so to say, mother of the future, how we look at it, right? So Swami says that is why the seed is important, and that is why the present is important. Because the present contains all the wisdom of the past and all the potential of the future.
Right.
Right, and when you look at the present moment as that, then you look at the statement that Swami is making. Swami is saying past is past. Don't brood over the past. The future is uncertain. Don't worry about the future. I think the usage of the words are very important.
Correct.
Swami says don't brood, don't worry. If you look at it, these are two emotions which actually weaken the present.
Yes.
As you rightly said, you know, when you're thinking about something that happened in the past, in all those experiments, that is when you're feeling vulnerable, when you're
exactly.
feeling weak. When you're worrying about something in the future, you don't know how the future is going to pan out. That is when you're making the present moment weak.
Correct.
So when Swami says live in the present, it doesn't mean forget the past or forget the future. Bring from the past what empowers the present. Factor in the future, which makes this present purposeful.
Very true. In fact, there's a very beautiful small poem by Rabindranath Tagore, which kind of brings out the same sentiment. He says, "On many an idle day have I grieved over lost time."
Right.
"But it is never lost, my Lord. Thou hast taken every moment of my life in thine own hands. Hidden in the heart of things, thou art nourishing seeds into sprouts, buds into blossoms, and ripening flowers into fruitfulness. I was tired and sleeping on my idle bed and imagined all work had ceased. In the morning, I woke up and found my garden full with wonders of flowers." So he says, even at the current moment, if you're feeling listless, if you're feeling, you're not feeling inspired to do anything, know for sure that whatever has happened in the past is also God's will, and it is His way of showering His blessings on you. So that that is one positive way of thinking of the past. Like, yes, of course, you should not worry about the past or worry about the future. This again comes down to these two things. It's, I think, fears and desires. Desires and fears.
Right.
So what happens is, you have desires which you want to be fulfilled in the future. You want this, I want this, I want this. See, that is more futuristic. I want this, I want that. But then the fears come. Arey, this didn't happen. What if this happens? So this is a call from the past. So desires and fears are some things which always come and stop your and ruin the current moment. In fact, there's another scientific study by some Harvard psychologists from the Harvard in 2010. What they did was they asked people to track their thoughts, feelings and activities at random intervals, and discovered that that people spend about 46.9% of their time doing one thing while thinking about another. 46.9% of the time, we are doing one thing while thinking about another thing. That is one. They also found this daydreaming makes them more unhappy than if they were paying attention to the present moment, even when it is unpleasant, like I said earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Even when the activity that you're doing at the current moment is an unpleasant activity, it doesn't bring out as much of unhappiness as pondering over the past or thinking about the future. So the study, scientific study says 46.9% of the time, they were actually thinking about something else and doing something else.
Yeah, especially the part about, even when the present is unpleasant.
Right.
To live in the present is a better option. I think that's a huge revelation.
Exactly.
In that sense, right? Mm. Because that's when we are most tempted to move away from the present.
Right.
Right. Either mentally or do something which takes us away from that moment. Because that's what Swami would say. I mean, the entire Bhagavad Gita is based on that. Where Krishna, when Arjuna wanted to run away from an unpleasant present, he said, no, this has to be dealt with. It has come from actions that have been performed in the past. Mm. So you have to deal with it in a certain way. So the whole idea of spirituality in that sense is, you know, what is the best way to dispense this present moment or live this present moment, right?
Yeah.
The whole problem is, what is the value or what is the purpose of time? You've been given a moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're always given only a moment. As Swami would say, you're not sure of the next moment. You can be only sure of now because it's there right now. Right? So it all boils down to what is the best way to spend any moment and how are you able to bring that into the present, or how do you spend this present moment bringing in the knowledge of what is the best purpose of time. Right?
Yeah, I mean, the past, present and future, all these are pertaining to time. And like Swami would say, don't waste time, live in the... And yes, there is one practice which definitely is a very, very important part of this entire endeavor to live in the present. I think one of the very important practices, at least for us who are beginning in the path, is silence. So, you know, when you become calm, when you become silent, you're at least able to understand that what has happened is happened, what is going to happen, and you not focus on the past or in the future. I can be in the present. And when I was reading about silence and I was exploring something about why it is so important and how to kind of live in the moment, there's a very beautiful passage from, again, Dr. John Hislop's book, which is My Baba and I,
mm-hmm.
the other book.
Right.
And he talks about a path called Ekanta Bhakti.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, Swami has spoken about this Ekanta Bhakti. And in a very beautiful manner, Swami is kind of bringing out what Ekanta Bhakti is. He says, Ekanta Bhakti is a subtle thing achieved by effective control of the mind and experiencing one's self. It is not correct to think that control of the mind means holding it steady without wandering around.
Mm-hmm.
See, we are often, now when we are talking about living in the moment, we are saying the mind is wandering around. How will you control the mind? How can you focus the mind? How can you calm the mind? To be able to cleanse the mind of impure thoughts is the correct meaning of Ekanta. To be able to cleanse it of thoughts, impure thoughts is the correct meaning of Ekanta. This is to be practiced in a quiet place free from noise or disturbance. The best time for practice is during the hours 3 a.m. to 5 a.m. Swami is saying, select a particular time in this period, close the door, sit quietly and adjust the breath so that the rate of inhaling and exhaling is the same. This is important. And further, by gradual practice, the number of breathings per minute must be reduced from 8 or 10 a minute to 2 or 1 a minute. So he says, slowly you reduce the frequency of breathing, and this has to be done very gradually. You have to take your own time, proceeding gradually in the process of reduction of the number of times of inhaling and exhaling. To control the breath in this manner, there is a very effective discipline that should be followed. The tip of the tongue must be made gently to touch the rear of the teeth. When it is kept in this specific position, the thoughts in the mind become less. You detach yourself from thoughts of the body and the things around you, and you come to the state of Ekanta Bhakti. Ekanta Bhakti is that state of mind without thoughts and desires when it is concentrated on God.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is one of the ways of calming yourself and being aware of the present moment. So if we were to kind of look at this entire process, now we are talking about living in the moment as the path. If this is the right path to be taken, so all the practices and all the efforts that are made are directed towards calming the mind, not allowing the mind to wander off in the past or wander off in the future, and keeping the mind controlled on the current moment, in the present moment. So, you know, sometimes I used to wonder, like Swami is like us, Swami is coming, talking to us. But when Swami speaks to a particular person, when Swami speaks to any one of us, we are so happy, completely, you know, in a totally different state of bliss. And we feel that Swami has actually come to speak to us only. That is this whole purpose of his avatar, that he has come to speak to us, to anybody. Like when he calls a family for interview, when they come out from the interview room, they're so blissful. And you feel that, oh, Swami is a part of my family. Swami is a member of our family. And he is able to touch that cord and become one with us. This is also a lot to do with being in the moment. See, when Swami is speaking to us, his complete focus, it's not like the scientific study that we just talked about, where 46.9% of your mind is, you're doing something else and your thought is somewhere else. When Swami is speaking to you, he is speaking to you. When he is looking at you, he is looking at you. So, 100% in the current moment. So, that is the life of, you know, a master of God, of a saint, who is, you know, able to live in the current moment 100%. They're able to give their 100% in the current moment. And that's why it is so effective.
Right. I mean, when we talk of any form of meditation, I think in a discourse where Swami speaks of the practice of meditation, you know, when you, as you said, when you sit quietly in an early morning time, and you know, there are these descriptions, you have to put a mat, you have to...
Right.
The whole idea of that is, there is, when you practice something or when you're trying to perfect the ability to live in the moment or rein in the mind, you do it in an environment where there are a lot of factors that you can control.
Right.
Right. When the moment you go into a quiet room or when you choose a time like early in the morning when you're sure that you're not going to be disturbed, you're controlling certain aspects which can be controlled.
Very true. Very true.
And when you sit in a pleasant place, you sit in a comfortable position, you don't have to worry about... They're saying things like, you know, why were they told to put a mat? You know, you're talking of times when people meditated in the forest.
Correct.
The moistness of the ground does not affect you. Insects do not affect you. Right?
Correct.
As simple as that. Just take care of things that you can control so that your mind is not disturbed. And in that moment, they say, you know, I found this example very beautiful. The mind is often compared to a flame, right? And this kind of controlling of the environment around you is like lighting a lamp in the middle of the house and closing all the windows so that the wind does not come and make the lamp flicker.
Right.
But even if you close all the windows and you put the lamp in the middle of the room, even then the lamp will flicker, right? And scientifically speaking, it's fire. It creates, you know, change in temperature around it.
Right.
And there is a movement of rotation of air. You know, the hot air goes up and the colder air comes down. And that itself makes the lamp flicker. But if you look at it from the point of view of the mind, even when you shut down all your senses and the input, still the mind will flicker because it can create its own disturbance.
Very true.
Right? So what they do is, now you try to pull that mind or drag that mind to something that happens now.
Hmm.
And what is that one thing that happens at the moment always?
Breath. Yes.
Right? So you concentrate on breathing in and breathing out. So that is the whole idea of that practice of meditation. And they say that for a master, it is so easy to live in that moment.
Right.
Right. Most of all, the Zen philosophy is about that.
Mm.
Right? There's this very cryptic story that I read, very simple, where there is this disciple who's been under his master for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
They say 20 years, 15 years.
Mm.
At the end of it, the disciple comes to the master and says, I feel that you're keeping away the main message from me because I don't seem to have, been enlightened or something seems to be missing.
Mm.
You're keeping the truth away from me. Literally, he accuses the master. He says, why do you feel like that? I've given you whatever I know. I've given you all the knowledge. He says, no, I feel that you're keeping away something. He says, okay, come with me.
Mm.
I'll give you that ultimate truth.
Mm.
He says, and he takes him to the forest in the middle of the woods. And he says, listen.
Mm.
And he says, the bird is chirping. The wind is blowing.
Mm.
The flowers are falling. I've given you all the truth.
Oh my God.
And then the disciple falls at his master's feet and he says, yes, you've given me the truth.
Mm.
He says, that's all it is.
Mm.
Standing there, if you can hear the birds chirping, if you can see the flowers falling, if you can sense the wind is blowing,
right?
That means you are living in that moment, right? And that's all it takes, that controlled environment meditation becomes a lifelong experience.
So that's what it's like. Swami would say, for the saplings to grow, you have to put a fence.
Right.
So
right.
All these practices are initial efforts that you put, and slowly your mind gets acclimatized to this kind of practice, and then you will be able to do it in the midst of a million people.
Right.
Another very interesting perspective about the concept of living in the now. There is this beautiful book, The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle.
Right.
So that is one book, and there is another book called Stillness Speaks.
Mm-hmm.
And Stillness Speaks is very nice because the very small passages of his thoughts that he just gives out, it's almost like a collection of quotations, his quotes on different aspects. And in that, this very interesting perspective, he says, most people confuse the now with what happens in the now. He says, most people confuse the now with what happens in the now, but that's not what it is. The now is deeper than what happens in it.
Mm.
It is the space in which it happens. He says, the now is the space in which things happen. If I'm drinking water, you can't say drinking water is now. Drinking water is an event that is happening in the now. So do not confuse the content of this moment with the now. The now is deeper than any content that arises in it.
Mm.
So I thought this is a very interesting pointer. It's a very interesting perspective. Like, we are so caught up with, like, for example, we are caught up with activity. Like when this disciple was taken to the forest and just be. At that moment, he's not thinking of his body. He's not thinking of his limitations. His whole experience is just being. The sense of being in that moment where everything becomes so alive. I think that is the way you slowly move from, the trying to look at living in the now as the path and moving towards living in the now as a goal. There are a couple of more thoughts on how the realized masters and the great saints, how their awareness is expressed, because they are 100% living in the current moment. But that will follow after a short break.
Yes, dear listeners, don't go away. We'll take a short break. We'll come back, because even the answer that Swami gives is not yet complete. Another dimension Swami adds to that, but that will be after this short break. We'll be right back.
ಬೇಡುವುದಿಲ್ಲ ಸಾಯಿ ನಾನಿನ್ನೇನು ಬೇಡುವುದಿಲ್ಲ ಸಾಯಿ ಹೃದಯ ಮಂದಿರದಲ್ಲಿ ನೆಲೆಸಿರುದೇವಾ ನಾನಿನ್ನೇನು ಬೇಡುವುದಿಲ್ಲ ಸಾಯಿ ಹೃದಯ
Welcome back, dear listeners, and we're talking about a very important topic in spirituality itself, living in the moment, right? So that's what we were seeing, and one of the interesting things that Hislop brought up was the example of Arjuna, where he says, maybe one conclusion we can come to based on what Swami answered is, whether it is paschatapa or purvatapa, whether it is repentance or it is thinking about the future, both if you are being weakened in the present, it is wrong.
Right.
But between purvatapa and paschatapa, maybe purvatapa is better, right? Because at least you have some kind of control. You are acknowledging that my present will affect my future, and you are being a little more cautious in the present. So in that sense, Purvatapa is better than Paschatapa.
But look at Lord Krishna himself. In the midst of the battlefield, when there is impending war, and what does Lord Krishna do? He sings a song. The Bhagavad Gita is a song. So he's completely in the moment. He says, okay, you're in this situation, but what is the truth? try to understand the truth. You cannot say, oh, because this happened in my life, I was caught up doing this, I was doing that, so I didn't have time to ponder on the truth. You know, these are all excuses. Life is never going to spare you. You're always going to be given situations and trials and tribulations. But in the midst of all that, you have to find what you're looking for. In fact, there's another very beautiful passage from Stillness Speaks. He says, spiritual seekers look for spiritual realization or enlightenment in the future. To be a seeker implies that you need the future. If this is what you believe, it becomes true for you. He says, you will need time until you realize that you do not need time to be who you are. To read it again, he says, spiritual seekers look for realization or enlightenment in the future. To be a seeker implies that you need the future. If this is what you believe, it becomes true for you. You will need time until you realize that you do not need time to be who you are. Because you are who you are right now. Right now you are who you are. And it is the removing of everything else that who you are not that leaves you with who you are. And that state of awareness and that state of complete harmony with your real nature is what the masters and the great saints have always been in. They have been in that state of awareness. In fact, I would like to read out one passage from the conversations with Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. It's from the book I Am That. And Nisargadatta, he says, Nisarga is natural state. So I am in my natural state. You are in your confused state. So let's try to understand what this natural state is all about. So he says, Nisargadatta Maharaj would always say that the past and the future are what are causing your problems because they are represented by desires and fears. You want something, so you're looking to the future. You are afraid of something that is from the experience of the past. For a child who does not know that putting a hand in the fire will burn, there's no fear because there's no experience from the past. So he says, so the person who's asking the question is asking, now that you're a realized master, don't you have desires and fears anymore? He says, my destiny was to be born a simple man, a commoner, a humble tradesman with a little of formal education. My life was the common kind with common desires and fears when through my faith in my teacher and obedience to his words, I realized my true being. I left behind my human nature to look after itself. He says, I left behind my human nature to look after itself until its destiny is exhausted. So he is looking at this body, his own body, his own mind, as a separate entity, the witness. He is witnessing this human body. He says, I left behind my human nature to look after itself until its destiny is exhausted. Occasionally, an old reaction, emotional or mental, happens in the mind. But it is at once noticed and discarded. After all, as long as one is burdened with a person, one is exposed to its idiosyncrasies and habits. So he says, even though you are a realized master, occasionally there a thought arises in the mind, but instantly it is looked at and it is discarded. You say, you cannot affect me. I affect you. You have to tell the mind that you exist because I exist. It is not that I exist because you exist. So it is the other way around. Then, of course, a couple of more, one or two more thoughts. So what is the state in which he actually is? What is awareness? He says, are you not afraid of death? You say that you are not having any fear of fear and desires. Are you not afraid of death? He says, I am dead already. In what sense? I am double dead. Not only am I dead to my body. See, the words are very, very important. He says, not only his body is not dead, but he is dead to the body. He says, not only am I dead to my body, but to my mind also. I am dead to my body and I am dead to my mind too. So I am double dead. And he says, well, you do not look dead at all. He says, that's what you say. You seem to know more about my state than I do. So he says, see, these are things that cannot be adequately expressed in words, because no words can define that state. That state defines everything. So you cannot try to have words that actually define the state. You can only define it by negation. So I think when you are in that state of awareness, you're completely living in the now, right? Isn't it?
Then absolutely. I think looking at it from the practically, yes, as we are sitting here and doing this discussion, or I mean, I found this when you're contemplating on something like this, it's very easy to understand these concepts.
Correct.
But the problem is, you know, as Vivekananda would say, a hungry man has to be, has to bother about his hunger right now.
Right.
You cannot give spirituality to a hungry man. And as you said, we are so caught up in this that we tend to put away spirituality when everything is settled, right? That doesn't happen.
Yes.
The whole idea is that harmonizing of the practical life and the spiritual, this one, as Swami says in a discourse, he says, you know, if you want sweet water, you cannot drink a sip of water and have a spoon of sugar, right? If you're having sweet milk, you cannot drink a gulp of milk and then a little. You put the sugar in it and then you turn it around, right? You mix it. So Swami says that process of stirring, that is sadhana, right? So that will ensure that every sip of milk will become sweet.
Sweet.
Which means every moment of life gets spiritualized through that sadhana. And I think in a way, what Swami says in this one is that, how do I practically, you know, live in the moment? And Swami says in this, but Swami, when I make some move in respect to the American Council, I have to consider what the consequences will be before I go ahead. That does not square with living in the moment. Swami says, but that is duty. In duty, you must look into the future and weigh the consequences. And Hislop says, oh, that is what is meant. Now I understand it. No, the important thing is, I think the yardstick by which you have to ask yourself, am I living in the present?
Yes.
Right. I may not be, as the way Eckhart Tolle speaks about it, or Nisargadatta Maharaj speaks about it, that's where we are heading towards. That's
right.
No doubt about that. But at the same time, what can I do right now? So the whole idea is, can I be worry-free?
Correct.
Can I be in a state of not being bogged down by the past or the future? Right? And one of the ways by doing that is, as Swami so beautifully puts it here, what is your duty of the present moment? When you're acting on something, when you're doing something, there's something as simple as we're sitting and doing this program. There is a duty that goes along with this task that you're performing.
Correct.
Right? To do that task, and as Swami would repeatedly say, the whole problem comes with, you know, the consequence. Right? You have done a task. Is it being appreciated? Is
Absolutely.
It being received well? Am I going to get the reward for this? Swami says at that moment, you remove the two, separate the two. You say, Swami, I have done my present duty. I offer it to you.
Right.
Right. That is one of the strongest ways, and I feel, you know, as Swami would say, the most practical way by which you can deal with the present. You've done a mistake. Swami says, it's okay. A mistake is a mistake. You cannot go back and, correct it. Resolve that you will not do it again.
Correct.
That's a way by which you are detaching that past from the present. And when you're doing something, there'll be expectation. Oh, Swami, I've done so well. I'm not being rewarded by my company, my parents, and my family doesn't respond to that. They don't value what I've put in. Swami says, separate that from the consequences. Offer it to God. Make the present perfect by saying that you've offered it to God. Right?
Yes. In fact, that is the attitude of, Nishkama Karma, which Swami says. Of course, there is a very beautiful amendment, or I would say a clarification to that. He says, I think it's in the chapter 1 of Gita Vahini, where Swami says, Krishna should have, if he said, do not expect the fruits of your actions,
right,
he would have said, karmanyeva adhikaraste na faleshu kadachana.
Right.
But he said, ma faleshu. So he said, there's a small difference, there's a very subtle difference. He says, the difference is, you cannot do an action without thinking about the result. Like, for example, you want to, you're hungry. You eat food so that your hunger is satiated. You cannot say, no, I will eat food without expectation that my hunger will be satiated. Or, so what Swami says is, do not own the fruits of action. Do not think that this, the fruit of action is mine. Ma phaleshu. Don't attach it to yourself. You are someone who is witnessing. You are involved in a good action and just leave it at that. Do not take the ownership of that action. And, these are all different perspectives about the whole idea of living in the moment. And it is common experience for most of us. Like I said earlier, when we look at Swami and when we speak to Swami, we are completely, lost, cut off from everything else around us. And the closest experience that comes to that is when you are with a child. See, when you are with a child, the child is completely in the moment.
Right.
The child is not bothered about the past, about the future. The child is present in the moment. And there's a very, very beautiful, lovely passage in the book Loving God, where Professor Kasturi writes about this aspect of living in the now. I just thought I'll read out these few lines. He says, the human child sees itself as the center of the universe and the world as an extension of its being. That this divine child, he's talking about Swami, says, this divine child knows that is so. The human child arrives without the label of a name. We stick one on its bro. Baba, the divine child, has announced, I have no name, I respond to all names. Baba has declared, I have no place which I claim as my very own. I belong to all places. I am wherever I am wanted. Children are most concerned with the now. Children are most concerned with the now. Baba reminds us, the past is past. Do not turn back and look wistfully or wailingly on the road you have traversed already. Children do not see the world as fragmented by walls or erected just to tease. They are involved in everything and with everyone. They represent true innocence, love, forgiveness, and fraternity. The child has no conceit or contempt of gender. This divine child affirms, among men, I am a man. Among women, I am a woman. Among children, I am a child. This statement is echoed in the Upanishads, which describes God as, you are a woman, you are a man, you are a girl, you are senile leaning on a stick. The human child delights to pour sand through its fingers. This child, I saw, grasped a handful of Chitravati sand. It became a book, the Bhagavad Gita. So he says, how the child lives in the moment. I mean, in response to that devotee's need, Swami just took a handful of sand and poured the sand and it turned into a Bhagavad Gita. So he says, Baba jogged gleefully on the white beach on the ocean where three seas lap the shore. This divine child sat on the seashore near Dwarka and played with both hands on the sand. An 18-inch golden idol of Krishna emerged. So he says, how Swami is the child and so playful in the current moment. This child inspires us to become children again. So what we may be ever with him. So that we may be ever with him. So he says, it's like the child who is completely in the now, who is completely, this divine child showed us how every action is spontaneous. And that has got a lot to do with what you just said as well about duty. Many times we have heard Swami saying, this is my duty, sir. This is my duty, sir. This is my duty. Swami, thank you for the prize distribution. This is my duty, sir. Swami, thank you for coming. This is my duty, sir. But that beautiful quote of Swami where he says, love without duty is divine. Duty with love is desirable. When you are doing your duty with love, when you do it, that love, you can direct that love towards God. That is when your action gets sanctified. And duty with love is desirable. And Swami is to often say how every action of yours, you offer it to God. So that is how you sanctify your action in the current moment. But love without duty is divine.
Right.
So everything is an expression, spontaneous expression of His love. And that is how a child is most of the time.
Right. Now, in fact, when you're talking about children, I remember this conversation I had with one of our professors. I think it's a very important one, because whenever we speak about being childlike, right? I think a few days back someone had asked me this question also. I remembered this conversation I had. We have often seen Swami coming up to the portico and calling a primary school child.
Yes.
And contrasting that answer with the answer of somebody from the university.
Correct.
And saying that how, you know, the child is he's more true and he knows the answer better.
Mm.
So this professor was telling that he would often see the scene and he would wonder, what is the message that Swami is giving? Is He asking us to go back to the primary school?
Mm-hmm.
And many times, if you have lived here long enough, 20 years or so, you've seen the same primary school kid becoming a university student, and
the answer
changes. So is Swami saying that you have to go back to that thinking of a primary school kid?
Mm.
Right. So when he was thinking about this, he understood. I think I'm not getting the exact conversation he had with Swami, where Swami hinted that, you know, you cannot be stuck up in the primary school level.
Okay.
In some conversation that he had. And then he said that this is the understanding he got.
Mm.
You know, when you talk of a child or the state of a child, and when you say that a child is godlike or God is like a child,
right,
you're referring to that state of innocence, which is so obvious.
Exactly.
Right? A child at that moment, the child cries when it's hungry. When child, the need of that moment.
Right.
If there's nothing, no need, it's happy by nature.
Mm.
Right. So that is the state that we are referring to. But the same state of innocence with complete awareness.
Complete awareness, exactly. Right. That is unconsciously happening for the child.
Right. So when you talk about the graduation, Swami says, don't get stuck up in the primary level.
Right.
It is easy to stay in that state when there are no troubles around you.
Right.
And the body is perfectly happy. Right. I mean, for a primary school child, there are no aches in the body. There are no problems in the body.
Right.
There's nothing to worry about.
Correct.
Right. So it is easy to say things that you've been tutored to say. It is easy to be always joyful and cheerful. But that is that primary school level. He said Swami wants us to have that mentality, but of that of, you know, you have to graduate to a state where with awareness you have that innocence.
Mm.
Right? That is the state of God.
Right.
Right. When Swami comes and speaks to you and me, and He's able to live in the moment, He knows every nonsense I've done in the past, and still He's able to love me in the present.
Exactly.
Right. So it is innocence with complete awareness.
Awareness. That's why many of these incidents which happen with the students, that famous incident when Swami is saying, who are you?
Right.
Who are you? Swami, I am so-and-so. This is my name. Swami, that is your name.
Mm.
Then he asks another boy. He says, Swami, I'm studying this. But that is what you are studying.
Mm.
But who are you? Then one boy said, Swami, you and I are one. There's no difference. Then Swami said, I was just going for darshan. You go and give darshan. And everybody laughed. But that shows the gap between words that we are speaking and actual experience.
Mm.
If really the person had that experience of being one with Swami, I'm sure he would have gone for darshan and the devotees wouldn't have seen any difference. But as these are all stages and this is all, a process, like Swami would say, you have to be ripe enough to reach that stage of, you know, instant realization. Like we had that story where the king was said, I want instant realization. Realization should not even take the time that I take to put one leg across the horse's saddle.
Right.
And the sage did give it to him because he was in a state of readiness. Because of all his efforts or all his earnestness across this life and across lifetimes, he was ready to receive that state.
Right. So that, in a child, it is innocence and ignorance.
Mm.
And Swami says this is the same innocence that comes because of that complete awareness. And
correct.
I was just reading a passage from Gita Vahini in the earlier show, where Swami says this, you know, where Swami puts it in the form of a dialogue and conversation between Arjuna and Krishna. Where he says, Arjuna is telling Krishna, you are speaking of all this as though it is so easy, right? Give up this, give up that, give up this desire, give up that, you know, craving, give up that anticipation. It is not so easy. So then Krishna says, you know, don't get so disappointed and despondent. You have faith in so many things, right? You have, that is why you pursue it. You don't pursue anything without having faith. Because you feel that an object has a certain purpose in your life, you pursue it.
Right.
Right. And most often you have no proof for that. Right. We all pursue wealth, we all pursue, but we have never found one person who can be absolutely happy with wealth.
Correct.
Right. But still we pursue it because we have faith in that. So Krishna says the same faith and steadfastness, you turn it towards my words. When I tell you there is nothing in wealth, when I tell you don't worry about pleasures, don't worry about future, he says don't worry about heaven. You have faith in my word. He says you have faith in my word, and it will not come just because I'm telling it to you. Faith does not develop just because you hear it even from me. Right? And we are all examples of that. Even though we heard it from Swami, it doesn't come.
Correct.
Swami says with the reason that faith strengthens. So he says you consciously, you know, when you say live in the present and you actually take in the wisdom from the past, how many of our fears of our childhood and teenage we have lived through and nothing. It's, I mean, at that moment it felt like, oh my God, my world is going to come crumbling down.
Right.
10th class and 12th class, and we've gone through all of that.
Right.
So that wisdom, bring it in the present and not, don't let the future bother you. Right.
Very
so
true.
That knowledge empowering the present is what Swami speaks of.
Another one, a very wonderful perspective on this is how your will, like Swami's will, when he is so pure and so perfect, it materializes instantly because it is so pure and it is so perfect. In fact, everything is born out of desire. For example, if you see, the whole creation is born up out of the desire of the creator. And there is this beautiful story in Tripura Rahasyam, where the king is lost and he is in the forest, and he comes across a sage who is so blissful, who is lost in a trance. And he says, oh my God, with all my kingdom, with all my wealth, I have not achieved this level of happiness and this level of bliss. So he asks, he waits for the sage to come out from his trance, and then he asks him, he says, oh, what is this? He says, no, I live in a world of my own. I have a different world. And then he says, no, no, I don't understand. What is all this? He says, are you ready to let go everything for the sake of that? He says, if that experience is going to give me this kind of bliss, yes, I'm ready. Then he says, come along. So what he does is, he takes the king and he takes him inside a cave. So this is a story which I found very fascinating. He takes him into a cave, and the moment the king enters the cave, they enter a completely different universe. It's a whole universe of its own. It has its own planets, its own cosmos, it has its own creation, its own earths, its own life forms, own life creatures. And the king asks, what is this? How did all this fit into a cave? He says, no, this is my world. And I have created this purely based on the power of my thought. And the king is totally bewildered. And then the sage shows him around, and he shows him the entire his universe and his world. And then the moment they come out of the cave, the entire scenario has changed. And he says, where is my kingdom? Where is my, what, where are we? He says, I think about 11,000 years have passed on earth. 11,000 years have passed on earth from the time we went into the cave and came out. So time is just very, very relative. So he says, then the king asks, why am I not able to do it? He says, because you're not giving that much power to every thought. So one way of doing that is to live in the now. So when you're living in the now and you value every thought and you're able to give that much energy and, you know, interest, you're able to show that level of interest on every thought and endeavor, then the power of the thought to manifest itself becomes greater and greater. And when Swami, just by a wave of his hand, is able to materialize anything, because at that moment he is completely in the now and he is identifying himself with the need of the person who is in front of him. So automatically that will manifests and is able to bring happiness. Right. Isn't that so?
I mean, when you read it in a book or when you read it from all these scriptures, definitely it's something very fascinating, and you think it's out of this world.
Right.
Not something that is we are capable of.
Correct.
But, you know, that's the beauty of sitting in front of Swami and witnessing it.
Yes.
I've seen it so many times. And Swami would explain it in such a way. It's just that, you know, you also have this ability. You also have this thing. And as you're saying, it all comes from purity.
Mm.
And Swami would say, there is this concept which, of course, it's not completely related to what we're talking of. A concept called the one brain theory,
mm-hmm.
as they say.
Mm.
If you really look at the human brain, they say that if you study it, it really looks like there are four brains in one brain.
Okay.
Right? The frontal lobe and the back one. And it's just that it's connected through tissues, right?
Mm.
So is it possible that every brain on this planet is also connected?
Okay.
But it's not connected through tissues.
Mm.
It's connected through some waves which we have not yet come to understand. So then this entire mass of humanity that you speak of is actually one brain, right? And that is probably one of the ways by which you can understand how there are some masters who can effortlessly look into another's brain.
Right.
Right. Just as easily as how I can look back into my memories.
Mm.
So there must be some way by which I can look into your memories or your thoughts at the moment. And that is possible when you are able to detach yourself from this body, from what you think are my experiences and my past and my duties and my present. The ability to detach, you're able to have an overview of everything, right? So when you talk about thinking in the present, living in the present, as you said, the deeper and deeper you go, the kind of understanding that it unravels is completely different.
Mm.
But at the same time, it is also something which is practicable, which is, when Swami says this is your duty, you do it. The entire Gita, as Swami puts it in one place, we've heard it from Swami many times, it all comes down to Mama Dharma.
Right.
And when you think of what is that Mama Dharma, it is nothing but using all the scenario around you to define what I'm supposed to do right now.
Right now, yes.
Right. And that itself is a sadhana by which you're constantly cutting yourself from the past and the future and rooting yourself in the now.
Right. Another of those beautiful incidents from the life of Anandamayima, when I was listening to one of those talks, I think it was a documentary on her life, because she's always been in that state of bliss and in that trance. And so they said, how about you? See, how come you are always? She said, no, don't talk about this body. And she refers to her body as this body.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't refer to herself as me. Because she's always in that state. She says, this body.
Mm-hmm.
She says, don't talk about this body.
Mm-hmm.
It's a topsy-turvy body. It goes through all sorts of things up and down. In fact, mm-hmm. for many years or so, if I'm not mistaken, she could not feed the body itself. Means she was in such a state that somebody had to feed her. Because there's no awareness that the body had to be fed, the body had to be taken care. And the experience of oneness with the creation that she was in, that state which she was in that every moment she is in that state of oneness with the creation, is when she was just crossing some path or she was going across, there were people who were actually suffering, who were poverty stricken, and she started crying. And she's saying, I'm not able to bear the hunger. I'm not able to bear the suffering. Because she is actually going through the pain that those people are going through on the road. So instantly that empathy, that oneness has reflected. And we have heard so many stories where Swami goes into a trance to save a devotee. Where there is instant connection. There is oneness. There are no two. Swami takes on the problems or the illnesses of a devotee onto his body. That is because, you know, at every given instant, they are in that awareness of oneness with the entire creation. That is the state which we will eventually reach if we are pursuing this whole process of living in the now.
Right. That's the possibility, and this, as Swami says, is the practice.
Right.
Every day that you have to do. So I think we'll conclude with that. That one section was only about living in the now. The next section is a little different. Again, it's a topic which was touched upon in the previous chapter also. But nevertheless, we'll take it up when we meet next time. Thank you, dear listeners, for joining us. We're going to leave you with a song. On the other side of it, we'll have the program Veda Jignasa, followed by the other programs that we have lined up today. Thank you for being with us. Join us again next week. We'll continue this Conversations with Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, documented by John Hislop, in the next episode too.
किसको बताऊं, किसको सुनाऊं पीड़ा मेरी, ओ भगवान। सुन लो रज मेरे भगवान, सुन लो रज मेरे भगवान। सच का कोई सहारा नहीं, मिथ्या भरी इस दुनिया में सच का कोई सहारा नहीं। तुम ही बस एक समझने वाले और दया की करीब हो तुम ही मेरे, तुम ही हो मेरे संसार, तुम ही हो मेरे संसार। किसको बताऊं, किसको सुनाऊं पीड़ा मेरी, ओ भगवान। सुन लो रज मेरे भगवान, सुन लो रज मेरे भगवान। जब मेरे साथ नहीं तो जग क्या मेरा साथ देगा, वक्त ही जब मेरे साथ नहीं तो जग क्या मेरा साथ देगा। कैसे संभालूं, किसको थामूं कोई न मुझको हाथ देगा, मुक्ति मेरी जीवन नैया, मुक्ति मेरी जीवन नैया, हर लगाओ साई घनश्याम, हर लगाओ साईरा, किसको बताऊं किसको सुनाऊं पीड़ा मेरी ओ भगवान, सुन लो रज मेरे भगवान, सुन लो रज मेरे भगवान, मेरे साईरा मेरे घनश्याम, मेरे साईरा मेरे घनश्याम, सुन लो रज मेरे भगवान, सुन लो रज मेरे भगवान, सुन लो रज मेरे